Good morning, everyone. I'm Tarek Bell. I'm a program manager from the AX development team. One of the features that I own is Upgrade, hence the talk. We're going to talk about how to speed up your AX code upgrade. Actually, we're going to go through a kind of a methodology, you know, a way of thinking about it, to plan how you create your customizations in the right way, how to actually use the tools to do the upgrade, and how to deploy in the best way to make your life as easy as possible and to make it as cost-effective as possible to be able to keep upgrading. Now, before I start, I wanted to address a question that comes up a lot when I talk to customers about upgrade. Obviously, for AX7, it's relatively new, but if we think about previous versions of AX, AX2012, AX2009, it could often be difficult for customers to keep moving, you know? Difficult for customers to take the latest cumulative updates because of the cost of doing that, the amount of resource involved in doing that. Merging your customizations was difficult. And sometimes customers could get into a mindset where they say, well, I've implemented, I created all my customizations, I spent a lot of time testing all my processes, everything works. Now, if it isn't broken, I don't want to fix it. You know, I don't want to change it now. Got it working, let's just leave it like that. If I stay still, nothing bad will happen. And actually, that's not true. Like, your code isn't changing if you stay still, but the environment, the system that that code is a part of, is changing. Your database is changing, it's changing shape, it's getting bigger, different tables are growing or shrinking, or their usage is changing. Business processes evolve over time. People start using the system in slightly different ways. The Windows servers that it's running on may take updates. The version of SQL may change. SQL may take updates, and so on and so on and so on. Things move. Just staying still doesn't mean everything will stay the same as it was tested on day one, because the system that that's a part of is moving around it. So it's important to make the decision to accept that you're going to update so that you're more in a preventative mode rather than waiting until something happens and then trying to resolve it afterwards. You know what I mean? It is a good practice to take those updates, and it's not the case that there's another option where if I don't do anything, everything will stay the same. Now, for the most part, when I'm talking about being able to take updates, and we'll go into this in way more detail in the coming slides, it's about the platform components, the kernel components, you know? The reason I'm saying more reliable, more secure, more performant is because I'm thinking about the underpinnings of the application server, the real framework elements of AX, you know? The things that decide whether the server runs or doesn't run, those kind of elements, rather than my journal form or, you know, any specific piece of business logic. Those things are important too, but you'll see as I explain, the focus is more, we're getting to a place where you'll be able to take those framework updates almost without having to do anything. Like, you can just take them. There's no merging, there's no nothing. So, what I've done is I've broken this down into three main sections. So preparation is about how you write your code in the first place to make updates easier, how the customizations are done in the first place. Execution is about actually doing the upgrade, the tasks that you do using the code upgrade tool, your developer tasks for the upgrade. And then deployment is, well, how do you actually roll it out to the different machines? What's the easiest way to do that? So, write custom code right. I was quite pleased with that. Basically, what I mean is using the right development paradigm, so not overlayering, essentially, or overlayering as minimally as possible, using the extension approach to the maximum, because customizations are the biggest factor in the difficulty of taking updates, you know? If you can't just install an update, if it's affecting objects that you've customized, you know? Then a developer has to go back and review those objects, decide whether the customizations are still relevant, rework them if the underlying object has changed and it affects the customization, and so on. And the cost starts to rise and the time starts to rise. So writing customizations in the right way, using extensions, means that it isn't overlaid. You haven't actually modified the original object, or you've modified it very minimally, and you'll see later how the code upgrade tool will deal with that for you then if it's minimal enough. How many of you have used AX7 already? Or how many of you are AX7 users? For the people that didn't say they're an AX7 user, are you how many people are AX2012 users? How many people have not used AX ever? Four. Nice. Yeah. The reason I asked that question is because we're going to go into some depth about the different kinds of updates and code upgrade tool and stuff. So I'm just trying to gauge how to position that with you guys, you know? How much knowledge of AX7 I should assume. So, the first thing is to acknowledge a difference between the two major kinds of update. Platform updates, which are, if you're familiar with previous versions of AX, equivalent of a kernel update. You know, that's the closest thing, closest comparable thing. Platform updates are about the underpinnings of the application server, the basic frameworks of security that enable you to log in and data access and, you know, those kind of back-end components, if you like. Application updates, on the other hand, exactly like application updates from previous versions, are the business logic stuff. It's mostly X++, and it will be related to the forms and tables and et cetera that users are actually using in their business processes. So that means platform updates, for the most part, shouldn't affect anything to do with your customizations. Now, sharp-eyed people will have noticed that it says there's an X++ element to platform now, because there is. Some of the packages in AX7 belong to platform. So that platform foundation and test essentials, which are X++ packages or models, belong to platform. What we're saying is there should be no overlayering on any of those platform things. And we want in the future to get to a place where we can lock access to be able to overlayer those X++ objects that belong to platform. The benefit of not overlayering those things means you can take platform updates without having a developer go and redevelop anything. Now, I say there are two types of update, but you see from the graphic, there are four tiles when you go into LCS. So people go, well, two types of update? Are you sure? It looks like there are four. Well, there kind of are. It's just the way that they're divided in LCS. You see on the right hand, the two tiles on the right above each other, platform X++ and platform binary, and the two tiles on the left are application X++ and application binary. For these purposes, we're grouping them together. At a higher level, there is just two types. The reason that they're divided is just because they have different types of code inside them. So, to be able to take platform updates easily, I already mentioned, remove overlayers. You notice how hard that word is, remove. It's not try and minimize them. It's not, oh, only if you have to. It's no, just don't. If you find yourself in a place where you need, for a business requirement, to modify something that's in platform, really challenge that requirement or challenge the way that you're looking at implementing that requirement. Is it the right thing if it means changing platform? There's going to be a penalty for that later, and as I said, we're planning to get to a place where we can lock platform. So those customizations, if you do that, will have a lifespan on them, you know? At some point, you'll be forced to rethink. It doesn't mean that you can't make any customizations that relate to platform objects. It just means not overlayering. That's an important distinction. Using extensions is fine. Actually modifying the original objects, not fine. Now, we're aware that there are business requirements that exist where people have been modifying those kinds of objects in previous versions of AX. We're not blind to that. And we're also aware that there might not be all of the extensibility points that you need at the moment to not overlay it at all. We want to know about those things. If you find yourself in that position and you've challenged the requirement and you still have a need to overlay, we really want to know. We genuinely want to know. We want to try and have the right extensibility points so that we can enable people not to have to overlay and enable people to be able to take platform updates whenever they want without having to worry about that stuff. When I say we want to know, that means logging it through support, tell them you have an extensibility requirement that the system doesn't do. It doesn't mean that we will immediately jump and release a hotfix with your extensibility point in it. That shouldn't be your expectation. For your implementation project that you're in, if that's what you're doing, you would still need to overlayer and move on. But by telling us, it means that that extensibility point should come later if we see enough demand for it, if we agree with your requirement, and so on. The other thing about platform updates is we aim to retain compatibility with all versions of the application. So that means we won't modify the contract of platform classes and methods in a hotfix like that. So if you're consuming something from platform, we won't change that thing so that your code breaks. We're obviously doing the same thing between the internal platform and application teams. You know, if we changed platform, we would break our own application if we were making changes like that. So we have a personal reason for ensuring that it works in that way. As long as you don't overlay, then that means platform updates are fair game. You can take them almost without having to worry about it. Application updates, on the other hand, a little bit stickier. You can still make your life as easy as possible, but I'm not so hard on this one. It's reduce overlayers. It's more reasonable to expect that you will have extensibility points that you need to add that are unique to you or unique to a particular specific customer requirement where you'll need to add your own delegate in a standard class or something like that to be able to use extensions. What we are saying, though, is be as careful as possible with those overlayers. If you're modifying standard classes, limit your overlayer to just adding a delegate and then add your logic in your own class. If you just add a delegate, then when you come to do code upgrade later, code upgrade tool will 9 times out of 10 deal with that and be able to resolve conflicts on its own if it's as simple as you've just added a delegate. If you add all of your logic in the class, it may not be able to resolve the conflict on its own. And then you're back to the place where a developer has to spend time merging that code, reevaluating the code. Now, in an application update, it is possible that a method you were consuming from standard AX will change. There's potential for that. We'll talk a few slides down about what the application team does using our code upgrade tool to make that as smooth an experience as possible if they do make a change like that. So it's not that we're making changes willy-nilly and we'll, you know, we're purposely breaking your code. We do something in the code upgrade tool so that when we make changes like that, code upgrade tool will try and resolve them itself for you without a developer going and manually changing them. But it's important to acknowledge the difference between platform and application in that respect. Application, those things can still happen. Platform, they won't. Now, the benefit of doing those things, the benefit of reducing overlayers or removing overlayers, isn't just a one-time thing, you know? The classic response from an X++ developer who's coming to AX7 when they see or they're being asked to use extensions is, oh, I have a one-line code change I just want to add to this standard class. Just one line. And now I have to make a delegate, and then I have to make my own class, and then I have to add that line. I have to subscribe to the delegate, and I have to add that line of code in my own class. I feel like I've just written 10 lines for one line, you know? Why should I have to do that? I'm like, well, if you use such an extreme example with one line of code, it does sound like it's making you do more work. But that's a very extreme example. And the problem with just adding that one line of code is that one line becomes two lines. Another developer comes, there's a bug, becomes three lines, becomes four, you know, and over time, suddenly the customer is back in that place where every time they take an update, someone has to merge that method. Because what was originally one line is now a bunch of lines and it needs to be merged because it was never done as a delegate. It's much safer to just always follow the rule. And then it doesn't matter what happens later. It's been written in the best way. If someone comes and adds to it later, they'll add to your class. You'll still be safe for updates. The benefit of doing that isn't just felt one time, you know? You write the code one time, hopefully just one time. But the benefit is every time there's an update. Every time. And, you know, you see how often we release updates. It easily pays for itself. And the reality of sitting down and actually coding those things, it makes hardly any difference. It really makes hardly any difference. I do it. I've done it. It's true. And I was that dev going, oh, why should I add? Why should I add five lines for a one-line change? And, takes a bit of time, but you convert. You start to see the benefit as soon as you take your first platform update, and you're like, wow, I didn't have to do anything. I just pressed go, and everything still works. Then you really feel it, and you feel glad that you did it that way. So just to reiterate, always extensions. I'm going to repeat that like 1,000 times through this presentation. I'm sorry. But it's important, really important. Only overlayer to add a delegate. Don't get sucked into that, oh, but it's just one line of code, because that's how it starts. Keep all your logic in your own classes. Just add delegates when you're in the standard classes as your overlayer. Also, as I mentioned with Platform, where we'd like to know about extensibility points that you're regularly having to add that we don't have, we want to know for application as well. We don't want to know the one-off one where one customer had some requirement where you had to add one, but when you're repeatedly having to add, then arguably there should be a standard extensibility point in there for you so that you don't have to overlay and add a delegate yourself. You know, there's a Microsoft one there. We don't yet have the field knowledge, you know, to add all of those places. That's where you guys come in. We need that feedback. We want that feedback so that we can start to build on that and reduce the amount of effort that a developer has to do for every customer, hopefully. Okay. Any questions about the extension stuff before I go on to execution? Would you mind using the microphone? Is that okay?
A limitation with protected or private methods and extending them to where if a method is listed as being private, you can make it hookable and you can extend off it at that point, but you can only do a pre or a post extension on it. So if there's a standard method that's private and is 900 lines of code and I need to put something right in the middle, there's nothing I can do with doing that.
Not as a standard event like the pre and post, but you can overlay that method and add a call to your own delegate in the middle.
That's what I ended up doing, which is what I was trying not to do.
Okay.
But I was stuck in that scenario where there was nothing I could do, but just basically what I ended up doing was creating a public method, called that in the middle, and then did a delegate off of that public method to my extension.
Okay. The owner of X++ is coming up behind you.
Yeah. So yes, the conclusion of the gentleman here is absolutely correct. Private methods cannot be used that way. But this is for a reason. The reason is that private methods are there to provide an implementation of a particular feature. What we're moving towards is to limit the access to that particular implementation so that it can change irrespective of the API that we offer for other people to use. So I would say this is more by design. And even if we wanted to, we couldn't because of some restrictions that the CLR imposes on running code. You're not allowed to sort of mess with private methods in that way. So your conclusion is absolutely correct. You can add a hookable attribute, and then you will be able to do pre and post. But if you do have something in the middle of an if statement somewhere that you want to fix, you cannot. That's the limitation of the code extension story that we have. By the way, we have extended our code extension story. There's a talk on Friday where I will go into that a little bit more. But your conclusion is correct. Okay.
Thank you, Peter. Okay. Any more questions before we move on? All good? So, execution. You've written your code right. The day's come when you actually want to take updates. So, I just wanted to give a high-level overview of the kind of phases that you go through or the process that you go through to take first an application update, and then we'll reflect that onto what you would have to do to take a platform update. So first of all, before you even start, you typically would evaluate the impact that you think it's going to have, right? In AX7, the easiest way to do that is to use the code upgrade tool. I'll show a bit in the following slide, so I won't go into too much detail, but essentially you can run this tool, and it will give you an idea of how many conflicts there are that need manual resolution for that build that you're trying to take. And you can use that as a gauge to judge if there's a lot of work involved or a little work involved. Obviously, at that beginning point, if you have ISV solutions, you know, third-party solutions, you have to follow up with the vendors to see whether they have a new version of this, an appropriate version of their solution for the update that you're trying to take for Core AX. And you can use the information then from the code upgrade tool to help schedule how you're going to move forward. You know, do we need a dev? How many devs? How many weeks is it going to take? Or how many days will it take? And so on. Then you'd actually perform the code upgrade. Apart from what you would know from previous versions of AX, you know, the actual developer work, sitting down and merging code and fixing code, the code upgrade tool takes the bulk of the kind of prep, if you like, away from you for that. What the code upgrade tool will do is connect to your VSTS or your Visual Studio Online or whatever the current name is this week, pull your custom code and pull the latest build of AX, and it will merge the two together. It does a whole load of specifics to automatically resolve conflicts, convert your code where it can, etc. And at the end of it, it'll come out with a bunch of conflicts that it couldn't resolve, hopefully not very many, depending on how well your code was prepared in the first place. And it will create work items for those things, work items in VSTS for those conflicts that are left for somebody to work through. And then the developer sits down and actually resolves those conflicts. Yes, would you mind using the microphone behind you, please?
So then I guess Since it's up there, you do recommend running that wizard. I've heard in the past that, you know, I've been encouraged actually to not use it to prevent, you know, more conflict, but with our application changes, but you say do run that wizard and then review after?
Yes, do run that wizard, review after. If I was taking, so in real life, I've implemented a customer for AX7 already, myself directly, and done the dev work myself and all the rest of it. If I'm taking a hotfix or a few hotfixes, individual fixes, I'm not using the code upgrade tool.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just go ahead and install them and deal with it manually. If I'm moving, say, from RTW to update 2, like taking a ton load of hotfixes, then I use the code upgrade tool to help me. What the tool will actually do is take your VSTS branch, your main branch, and branch away, create a copy of it, branch from that, do the upgrade there, so all your stuff is still safe, and then you merge back when you're done. When you've resolved the conflicts, you can merge back again.
Okay, thanks.
Now, for application updates, it's reasonable to expect that there'll be a data upgrade component. Data upgrade is perhaps lesser known for AX7 at the moment. I don't know whether anybody has actually had to run data upgrade themselves. Show of hands if you have. No. Wow. One, two, three. Not many. Data upgrade in this context, you know, I don't mean anything to do with coming from AX2009 or AX4 or AX2012 to AX7. I mean upgrade scripts within AX where we've changed an application feature from one build of AX7 to another build, and we need to update a field in a table to reflect the new change or something like that. You know, we need to update data. So what in the previous world would have been on the upgrade checklist? You know, you install a fix, and then when you open AX, the checklist would come, and it would make you run some scripts before you could get rid of the checklist, basically. That, the equivalent of that, of the checklist. It still operates in a very similar way under the hood to as it did in previous versions. It's using those release update classes. It's using batch jobs, running those release update classes. If you have custom stuff where you need to upgrade data from one version to another, it's the same process like it was in the past. You create a release update class for it, you tell it what version it applies to, and then when somebody installs it, it will get triggered. The difference is that data upgrade isn't executed through an interactive checklist that pops out when you open the browser. It's part of the deployable package experience. There's a special deployable package that you run that will trigger the data upgrade steps, those batch jobs, to run. So if you're taking an application update, there's a piece of it that's that. You know, it's possible that you might have bad data. You might have to iterate on running the data upgrade to make sure it runs actually against prod data. You may have to create your own custom scripts for tables that you've changed at the same time or that you've customized and Microsoft have changed. But that's done in the same way as it was done in previous versions. Nothing too special about the way you do that. Then finally, at that point, you'll have a build of all of your custom code that runs. You'll have a data upgrade that you know will finish successfully against copy of prod. You're ready to deploy it somewhere, let users actually get to it, test it, make sure that everything works as they expect. Now, if we compare that to platform, there's not that much to it. If you haven't overlayered, there's no code upgrade because none of that code applies to what you've done to that environment, you know, what you've customized in that environment. You can just jump straight to deploying it in an environment and testing that it works. The reason I have data upgrade kind of grayed out is because it's possible that we could make a change that would affect one of the platform tables where we'd need to run a data upgrade to. It's less likely than application, but it's possible. What this is trying to show, that comparison about how easy it can be to take a platform update. No overlayering. You know, the work of installing an update, testing aside, it's mostly about dealing with your customizations, merging code, dealing with standard classes that have changed, where you were relying on them working in a certain way with a customization that you had. For platform, no overlayers means you can just install. I think the common question at this point, asking myself questions now, the common question at this point would be, well, what do I need to test then? A platform update's not about any of my business processes, really. Well, on the one hand, you could say it's about all of them. On the other hand, you could say it's about none of them, and it's kind of both things at the same time. You know, what do you test? And similar question to previous versions of AX, where people would take a kernel update, right? And they would say, well, you know, can I just put it in? What should I test? What's actually changed in it? And it's like, well, even if we told you the details of the things that would change, I'm not sure that that helps to know what to test. Oh, we've changed this quirk of the data access layer. Should I test anything that reads from the database or writes to the database? That's, you know, it doesn't make sense, right? It's more the case that it's, the way I think of it is more like a smoke test, you know? It's making sure that system runs again after it's installed, that you can log in, that you can print a report, that you can, you know, those kind of framework, basic framework things. It's reasonable to expect that if you can get into one, that all the others will work in the same way as the one did. So it's those kind of, just briefly touching on the different sort of technical areas. And typically for me, it is exactly as I describe. Can I log in? Can I open a form and edit a record and save it? Can I run an SSRS report? Can I, you know, just going through the basics like that. Can I still get into Management Reporter? Is the system running, essentially? And do the base components work? I would expect still to have an element of user testing, but basic, you know? You just get them to run a few core processes to make sure everything still works. So, as I alluded to earlier, I mentioned we want to lock platform so that you can't overlayer it, and gave you a long lecture about extensions, always use extensions, never overlayer it. Now, the motivation behind that is that we want to get to a place where platform can be continually updated without it affecting anybody. Platform updates can just be taken. The base reliability of the system, you know, the number of hours that it stays running without going down unexpectedly, should be improved by doing that, you know? The core reliability of it should be improved by doing that. Now, that doesn't mean that we're gonna start randomly deploying packages in your environment. We're not that crazy. A little bit crazy, but not that crazy. What it means is still to be defined, actually. We can't give you prescriptive, it's going to happen exactly like this yet. But if you work with any cloud services, you'll know that they do things like that. Typically, it would be in a model where when a release comes, an environment gets given to you that already has it, you have an amount of time to validate it, and then it will be deployed in your production at a time agreed within that window. So you're still given a chance to do what you need to do, but you're kind of pushed along, should we say. So, code upgrade tool. The fun part. Now, I mentioned when I was talking about application updates, roll back a few slides, talking about application updates, and I said in an application update, actually, they might change the signature of a method, and it could affect your custom code. but that we do something to try to make that easier. This is the thing we do. So when one of our application devs makes a change like that to a class, let's say they used to use method A for a particular thing, and in the fix, they've deprecated that method, and they've made a method B, and they want everything to switch to use method B. They can decorate that method so that it will say that it's deprecated and that you should use this other method, like you'll get a build warning or a build error to warn you that it's deprecated. But then you still have to do something, right? Now, the way that they're doing those things is shown in the code upgrade tool. So they'll write what's known as a detector script that will basically find places where it's used. You know, it's a bit like a best practice rule. It will find it will notice a place where it's used and say, oh, I've got a rule about that. That's deprecated. You should be using this method. So that's kind of how it finds things and could warn. Optionally, they can also write a fixer script. So when it finds the thing, it won't just warn you and tell you you've got to go and do something and log a work item and all the rest of it. It will actually try to resolve the conflict itself. Like in that method A, method B example, it would replace it with method B for you and tell you that it found this thing and it's replaced it with method B, and thank you very much, off you go. That's pretty cool, actually. That's quite a big step forward for us to be able to do things like that. That means even where, you know, I talk about overlayering at length, but even where you have completely separate custom code that's just using code from standard, you know, it's not about an overlay or anything, you've just written your own class and it happens to call some standard methods, you can still have conflicts when updates come, you know, because we've changed those standard methods and now your code doesn't work. Even though it's nothing to do with overlayers, this is about being able to address that problem. So if we know we've made a change, where we've changed the way that something should be used, code upgrade tool will find it. It will try to update the code where it's been used. It's not hard. It doesn't go mad and always just do like a find and replace. Wherever it finds method A, it just puts method B in. It has some kind of limitations to it. You know, it will attempt to. And if it meets the requirements, it will make the change. If it doesn't, it will still say there's a conflict. I couldn't resolve it. Method A has been replaced by method B, but I couldn't resolve it on my own. The code upgrade tool will say it can't resolve it on its own. It will still flag it to you. It will still log a work item for it, same as it would for any conflict. But in best case, it will actually resolve it. Any questions about that before I move on? No? Oh. I was expecting someone to ask how they can write their own detector and fixer scripts.
How can I write my own detector and fixer scripts?
Thank you, Clay. You can't. I did set you up for failure, sorry. No, at the moment it's for us. And I don't have immediate plans, but I was interested to see whether people were like, oh yeah, that sounds brilliant, I'd love to have that. So, some of the things that the code upgrade tool can do, this is a non-exhaustive list of things that the code upgrade tool will do when it executes. I think at this point, has anybody had an AX2012 solution that they've upgraded to run on AX7? Any ISVs lurking around? You guys have done everything over there. Yes, as well? The reason I mentioned 2012 to AX7, which doesn't really fit in the context of everything else, because for code upgrade tool, that illustrates just how much it can do a bit more than when you're going from 7 to 7. It's essentially, in that scenario, taking a model store from AX2012, a model store database from AX2012, and converting all of that code into the XML file format for AX7. That doesn't sound too exciting. It's also dealing with the package split, though. You know, the fact that we have this hierarchical, or kind of hierarchical, packages that relate to one another. And depending on where you've made customizations, it will deal with that, split your models across the packages. It will also convert changes you've made into metadata extensions wherever it fits the pattern strongly enough that it can make that decision. And it will try to do all of the things that it would do in a 7.7 upgrade. So converting objects to metadata extensions, I talked a bit about extensions, but it was really about in the context of code. You know, talking about overlayering and adding a delegate. Actually, metadata extensions is just meaning, for those not that familiar, it's just meaning changes you would make to an object itself. Not necessarily lines of code, but one of our objects. So let's say you want to add a field to a table. You can actually create a table extension, add your field there, you know, just by clicking, not writing code, and then that customization to that table is also not an overlayer. Now, the code upgrade tool will recognize some patterns like that and automatically convert the change that you've made into an extension and delete your overlayer and tell you that it's deleted it and tell you what the new object is that it's created. So again, it's not tough with that. It's gentle because it doesn't want to break your code by doing that. So for simple things, like if you'd added a menu item to a standard menu as an overlayer, when you run code upgrade tool, it will convert it to a menu extension and delete your overlayer from the menu because it knows that's pretty safe. And for some other metadata changes that you may have overlaid, made as overlayers, it will do the same thing. But again, only where it can be 100% sure that it wouldn't cause another error by doing that. So it's quite gentle in the way that it goes. That doesn't mean for the wily developer, going back to the mindset of, oh, why do I have to add 5 lines of code? That doesn't mean that you could just add everything as overlayers and then run the code upgrade tool and it'll do the extension stuff for you. It is only in some limited scenarios where it will do the automatic conversion to extensions. It's not a secret trick that you can use. Yes, would you mind? I can repeat for you if you... no, not at the moment. It's a nice idea, though. I mean, if you're going to go that far, why not have the machine write the code for you in the first place? You know, that's not the first time that we've suggested that. Yeah. It would be a lovely idea that Cortana could do that. Actually, we're talking about Cortana, I'm going off on a tangent, but we're talking about Cortana integration with AX, you know? You think about the power of machine learning and stuff. You come in the morning, and instead of it going, oh, these are the orders you need to action today, or these are the things that are overdue, it's like, they were overdue. I phoned the vendors for you. Go and have a cup of coffee. It knows, right? It has all the information it needs to be able to do it. Same as the human who's going to do it. Anyway. Sorry? Let's move on. So it will make a bunch of other changes. It has quite a lot of capabilities. It's difficult to go into the nitty-gritty of how much it will do. When you run it, you will see the different types of things that it can recognize. And hopefully you'll be surprised in some instances, particularly where we're doing that detector fixer stuff, where it's actually got some intelligence to it. It knows that we've changed the application in a certain way, and it knows what the simple changes that has to be made to anywhere that was using that. And of course, it's even quite lovely, if it can't resolve it, that it tells you where the conflict is, what it thinks is wrong, if it knows, and logs a work item so that somebody can go back and action it. It's taking some of the administration away from the developer, you know, or from whoever would have to do that, and letting them focus a bit more on actually developing instead of logging work items and what have you. Okay. So let's show you the code upgrade tool a little bit, shall we? So first of all, this is LCS. You should hopefully all be familiar with Lifecycle Services. LCS is the abbreviation of Lifecycle Services. It's the site where you deploy your AX7 environments. It's where you manage the environment from. It's also where the code upgrade tool lives. And you'll see its tile just over here. It's at that top level when you click into your project in LCS. The code upgrade tool is available at that top level. There's a little bit of setup required before you can do that, so I just wanted to show what that is. Essentially, the project in LCS needs to be linked to your VSTS project, has to have access to your source control so that it can go and get your customizations to see what the impact would be for code upgrade. So there's a small bit of setup required at the beginning. For anybody who is involved in the kind of pre-releases of AX7 or has used this in the past, but perhaps not in recent months, the experience of hooking up to your VSTS is vastly improved to how it originally was. It literally takes a couple of minutes to do it, you know? You just plug in your URL. It will ask you to get a key from VSTS. So you just log into VSTS in the browser as you normally would, go into your profile, and you can copy your key from there, paste that into LCS, and then it has access. Choose the project that you want to be the VSTS project that you want LCS to be associated with, and then off you go. After that, it's got access. And Code Upgrade Tool will use that. It's using that access then to be able to log the work items for you. It's using it to be able to create the branch when it runs Code Upgrade Tool. And it's using it, crucially, to get your customizations. Now, Code Upgrade Tool itself pretty much looks like this. Now, really all you do to run it, let me actually show you from the beginning. If I click into Code Upgrade Tool, hopefully this won't log me out as I haven't touched it for a few minutes. You basically go down here and say add, give it a name, and tell it to run. And it will go off and take your latest from your trunk main branch in VSTS. And it will run against the latest available build of AX7 at the time that you run it. Now, one thing to note, so people would normally ask at that point, well, how long does it take? You know, does it mean I have to leave it overnight? Or does it just take a couple minutes? Or, you know, what's the deal? The actual execution time for it varies depending on how big the update is and how big your customizations are, you know, how much work it actually has to do, basically. But ballpark is it takes kind of 30, 40 minutes for a decent amount of customizations and a larger update from Microsoft, 30, 40 minutes to actually execute. Often much quicker than that if you don't have that many customizations. One crucial aspect to it is if you run it, if you see the notification that update 3 has just been released, and you immediately go to Code Upgrade Tool and click it, you and thousands of other people are doing the exact same thing. And it may take longer in those situations, where we've literally just released an update and everybody is running it at the same time. Then it's under pressure and it will take a bit longer. There's a kind of a queuing mechanism in the background, I believe. But you can expect 30, 40 minutes. When I'm running it for demos and what have you, or preparing for sessions like this, it's minimal customizations, because obviously it's not real customer, it's just stuff that's set up for a demo. And it's 10 minutes, less than that. Literally finishes and you think, that was a bit quick. Did it actually do anything? And then it does. It's really not that bad at all. When it finishes running, you come to this page and it will say processing, and then if you just leave it, it will refresh on its own. At the end of it, you get an Excel report back, which has information about the changes that it made, what overlays you've had, where the conflicts were, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I'm not going to go into hideous detail about how to deal with every different possible message that would come from the report. Here's an instance of it where I've basically made a few specific changes, and you'll see there's a whole raft of sheets in this workbook along the bottom there. But the important piece, or the easiest piece to kind of get to grips with, is this merge report. We have conflicts that are not resolved. The two I've had, you see in the final column, are resolved. You just basically jump to that sheet, filter it for conflicts, filter it for not resolved as well, and see, okay, well, what's the kind of rough effort looking like? How many things is it flagged? And, you know, with someone that has knowledge of that particular customer, they'll go, oh, that's that class from that customization, and that's that class from the other customization, and oh, that one's dangerous. It's going to take a lot of effort. You know, someone needs a bit of knowledge of knowing what the code really is, but it gives them a much simplified way of very quickly being able to see what's likely to be affected, how much effort as a dev they're going to have to put into doing it, and be able to give a kind of ballpark estimate on when they can do it, how quickly it can be done, or how much it will cost effectively. Now, deployment. Any questions about the execution piece just before I move on? Good? Okay. Deployment. Let's say you have an implementation project. You've gone live already. You're doing an update from one build of AX7 to another build. You have a production environment and a test environment, maybe a couple of test environments, and a bunch of developer machines, like one for each developer. And a new build comes. Everyone's on RTW, and you want to upgrade to whatever the current release is at that time, or whatever the current update is at that time. For those developer machines, in the past, if it was AX2012, you know, people would have gone around upgrading all of the machines, you would have thought, especially for kernel, you know, platform components, kernel components. You would have run the install everywhere. Actually, what we're seeing, or what I recommend, is not for the developer not to spend time maintaining those machines, but to use the advantage of those things being hosted in Azure, just redeploy them. Somebody will have to, in some places you will actually have to install stuff, but if you're not forced to install, it's much easier to just click, carry on working, and then switch to the new one once it's deployed and delete the old one and move on. And that's what we've been doing. So I walked through the high-level process of how you would take an update. This is more with a focus on the developer and actually how does he get the machine? What happens when the code upgrade tool kicks out that upgraded code and the developer has to go and actually make some changes? So let's say I'm in that situation. I have everything on RTW. I deploy one new dev machine. I've run the code upgrade tool. It's gone, ta-da, there's a few conflicts. You need to go and resolve. Here's your work items. I deploy one new dev machine. To start with. Start with one. The new dev machine is on the current update that I want to upgrade to. I sync it to VSTS, to that branch that the code upgrade tool created, and it will pull down all the customizations that are mostly upgraded to the update for that machine already. What that means is all your syslayer stuff, all your base stuff, so you know, your platform, etc., will already be updated on that machine. The only thing that needs extra is the customizations. The rest is already done. Sync it to VSTS. Make the merge changes that need to be done, and then you're good. For the other dev machines, they can all be deployed. At that moment, redeployed. Click, click, click. Wait for them to deploy. Once they're ready, the devs can switch over and start working on those and delete their old machines, drop their old machines. Now, that might sound a bit strange, but there are advantages to doing that, you know? I talked at the beginning about just leaving an environment doesn't mean that it will stay the same, you know? Other components need to be updated too. Other things change. Not just the X++ code or not just the AX application code itself. All the other things that are involved in that software running, you know? So some examples, some real life examples from now, the version of SQL changed. If you deployed an RTW AX7 machine a while back, a dev machine, it could have had SQL 2016 CTP3 on it. If you deployed it a bit less time ago than that, it might have had SQL 2016 release candidate on it. And if you deploy one now, it will have SQL 2016 RTM on it. Because that was what was available, you know, soon when those things are available and we've tested it, we update the deployment so that those machines will get the latest version. That's all with RTW. That's not about, oh, I have to take update 2 to be able to get the release version of SQL. That's just because SQL came out, it will switch. So there are advantages in redeploying those machines and not keeping them. Not just about not having the developers spending time updating their machines instead of developing, which is obviously also important, but technical advantages to having the latest versions of the other components on there. There can also be potentially be infrastructure changes related, you know, under the hood changes that are not to do with AX. If you think about something as simple as even with a dev one box for AX7, when you log into AX, you're going to something.something.dynamics.com, right? You're going through an Azure cloud service and hitting a Microsoft's DNS somewhere and arriving at your application. There are elements to even a dev environment, infrastructure elements that are not on that machine or that can potentially shift in the background, you know? So there's a benefit to switching machines like that. If I liken it to something internally, I used to work in a team at Microsoft where, it makes me sound very old now, but where you had to build your own environments, right? You're working on lots of different AX things. You had to build your own environments, or you might have a bunch of servers and loads of VMs running on them, and you have to maintain them. You build them from scratch, or eventually you create images of different ones so that you can more easily deploy your own ones when you need it. Then we switched towards having a big lab where you could go to a web page and click and deploy a machine. And what most people did to start with was deploy a set of machines and just keep them permanently, and never delete them. And always go on there and maintain them, always go on there, maintain them manually. And it was a real mindset shift. It took us months and months before we got into a mode where you get used to the fact that you can just delete them. You don't need to spend time installing anything anymore unless you actually have to install it, unless the act of installing it is important to you somehow. Just redeploy. Let the machine deal with that. Go and do some work. Go and do some other work and let the machine just deal with it. And so by just redeploying machines like that instead of updating them, it's much easier. It's just a bit of a mindset shift. I mean, for me, in projects I've been working on, AX7 projects I've been working on, we do that. And there's very little. You know, it's true that there might be the odd thing that you install on the dev machines. Like, you know, I install Azure Storage Explorer or, you know, some little widgets like that. It really takes no time at all to do that compared to always updating SQL and Windows and AX and blah by hand yourself, you know. In practical terms, what I do is just I have an Azure Storage account where I keep the MSIs for the little tools that I like to have. So when I deploy a new dev machine, all I do is install Azure Storage Explorer, download everything from my account, and just let them run. And then it's back how I want it with my, you know, Notepad++ and AZCopy and whatever it is that I want. For Microsoft-managed environments, so I talked a lot about dev environments there because it's a bit more applicable. the Microsoft managed environments, we deal with it. So it doesn't matter. For production, it will always be Microsoft. When you're taking large updates, Microsoft will also update the default sandbox environment that you get. They'll do the deployment for that. Because we want to prove that the deployment works in sandbox exactly the way that it will be done in production, i.e. the way that we're going to do it in production. So we want to do it in sandbox as well, so that we know when it happens in production, it will be exactly as it was tested, exactly as we did it. And there are instances where in the background, what we're actually doing is redeploying the environment as well. We make it look like it's exactly the same environment as it was before. Afterwards, we put everything back how it was. But the mechanism can be sometimes that we're actually redeploying. For the same reasons, our infrastructure can change for your production environment. The underlying Azure infrastructure can change, and we may need to, when we're deploying a big update for you, actually redeploy the environment too. So, any questions about deployment or about the AX7 upgrade process in general? Yes?
What's the best way to do iterative upgrades of 2012 code?
What's the best way to do iterative updates of 2012 code? Do you mean you're coming from, let's say you're an ISV and you have a 2012 solution, and when you're making fixes for that, you want to merge them back into 7 again?
Correct.
That's what you mean? Depending on what the change is, because there's a conversion in how the code is stored, 2012 versus 7, if it's a significant amount of code, it's useful to use the code upgrade tool just because it will give you the source files. If it's a small change, I was in that situation, right? We were upgrading a customer from 2012 to 7, and 2012 isn't frozen immediately, you know? The code freeze hasn't happened. The fixes are still happening. When it was small things, instead of going through that big faff of running code upgrade tool, getting a whole load of new source and picking out the bits I want, it would be cut and paste. Two sessions open, cutting and pasting the code out of one into another. We don't have a simpler way at the moment. There have been things lurking around where people make a widget that they can plug into 2012 that lets you take it out in a 7 format, but we have nothing official that's like that. If it's a big change, code upgrade tool, small change, cut and paste is just more pragmatic, you know? I think you had a question? Okay, so the question was, is there a tool to be able to find out the extent of customization done to standard objects or platform objects? So let's think, are you thinking about a scenario where we want to get rid of all the overlayers in platform? So what's the damage, you know? What do I actually have in there? How big is it going to be to do that? Code upgrade tool can help you with that. One of the tabs in that Excel sheet that comes out is all the overlayers. Just has everything that you've overlaid, the object, the path to it. You can filter it to see what packages it is, you know, filter for platform and foundation. You'll see everything that's still overlaid from that instance. Robert, you don't get to ask questions. Okay. Would you mind grabbing a mic?
So even if you haven't gone through the code upgrade tool, VSTS is very integrated with all development environments. So all your code will be in VSTS. You can actually go and look at the history of all the code checked in that are of type delta. Delta are the overlaying. And it'll give you a good sense of what's being overlaid right away.
Thank you. Yes. Would you mind using the mic as you're so close?
Yeah. So we're in R2 CU7.
Okay.
Do you recommend going through the effort of getting to R3, or should I just get to the latest CU of 2012 R2?
Good question.
Yeah.
So I'll explain how it works. I kind of don't want to be hard and go, no, you have to do it like this. Officially, it should be as new on 2012 as possible. Like R3 and all the CUs would be ideal world. What will happen, I want to explain how it works. What will happen if you do 2012 R2 CU7, I've actually done it, exactly that version. Code upgrade tool, when it does the conversion from 2012 to 7, it will flag some things as problems because there's 2012 code missing that it expects to be there. You know what I mean? It will think some things are custom, so it will flag a bunch of things that are not really a problem, but they're because you didn't have that code in your 2012, you know? So it gives you some spurious information, basically, but still technically possible to do it. Obviously, that makes it harder.
Yeah.
So that's the trade-off, basically. It will run still, but it will flag some stuff that's not actually a problem.
Thanks.
For me, in that situation, the R2, R3 isn't so important. It's more the CU that's important. You know, R3 was adding specific functional features in certain areas, and if you're not using those areas, then it's not that part of it isn't the most important part as the CU. It's possible you'll just get some things flagged, that's all. Yes, please.
What's the roadmap look like for extension stories with workflow? Obviously, the code pieces of workflow can pretty easily be done. They're typically standalone elements, but if you're going to add workflow to, say, the sales order form,
mm-hmm.
you can't, you have to overlay. You can't extend.
That's a good question. I'm wondering whether you're from a company that I've been talking to recently, because I've heard the same thing from another company very recently. I don't have a fantastic answer for that at the moment. I'm aware of the requirement. At the moment, you do still have to overlay for some of those things. Workflow is one of the areas that's been flagged by other people. We want to get to a place where we can do it through extensions, but I don't have a date or a plan yet for that, but we are aware and we want to do something.
If you can be more specific, we'd like actually to hear from that because telemetry is not showing a lot of workflow overlaying. We based all our extension priorities on our telemetry, and it's coming from code upgrade. We have quite a lot of telemetry. So maybe you can contact Tarek, myself, or Peter's here too, and we'll see.
Thanks, Robert. Anybody else? Yes. That's okay.
So my company is very new to AA7.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That would require, basically we want to grab some application settings, so we want to grab them from web today.
Yes.
So now, on a dev environment, it's pretty easy. We can go with web today, we can change it to whatever.
Yep. I'm with you. So just to paraphrase the question, let's say I have a customization that has a third-party element to it, a DLL. The DLL wants to use app config or web config files for switching configuration between environments, something like that. And when I go to prod, how do I deal with that? Because I can't get to prod to change the config. That is a hard limitation. And ideally, I would try to avoid building it like that. I've had similar customizations. I've had to build similar types of customization. And instead of storing those environment-specific settings in a config file, I'd store them in the AX database. The DLL is being called from inside AX. I have a parameter form then where I can go and fill in the details that that DLL needs to pick up, and I read them from there. That way I can either manage it with a data package, you know, essentially the DMF, the data import export bits that go across, or as part of the release note that sysadmin knows he has to go and set this value in this form in AX as part of the deployment for that. Because he can still get into AX, he just can't get onto the machines. Any other questions? No? Good. So there's a few additional references. There's information on our wiki that's being updated all the time, very, very often actually in the moment, new articles are coming. So if you've looked on there, don't assume that that you've seen everything and that there's nothing new to be had. It keeps changing very often at the moment. Every week, you know, there's new stuff. There are a couple of related sessions. Unfortunately, I think both of these have already happened, but at least the codes mean you can go back and look them up and find out what they were about. And if you could please evaluate the session, the official slide. Thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy the rest of Ignite.